And while the health care law remains in limbo, the just-passed Jobs Act awaits the president's signature. The bill allows the public to invest in startup companies and small businesses. That's created a lot of excitement in Silicon Valley and also a lot of concerns. As NPR's Steve Henn reports, some in the business community are worried there may be a new wave of financial fraud.
Clint Gordon Carroll and his buddy Alan Peacock had an idea. They figured they could build a quicker way for computer users to back up all their files and store them in the cloud. They built a prototype and came up with a name for their company, Space Monkey. The one thing they didn't have was the cash to transform this idea into a reality. And in Utah, where they live,
Investors just aren't used to the nature of high-tech startups and how those work.
Alan Peacock says there were some folks who were interested, but generally they were used to investing money in things like real estate or restaurants.
They want you to have revenue, and they want you to have profits, and they want you to show, you know, market traction. And with a technology startup, there's often this huge upfront development cost that you need to invest in before you can get to that point.
Peacock had a few friends who were willing to put money in with them, but right now federal rules require that anyone who invests in a startup before it goes public and files detailed financial statements has to be a so-called accredited investor. Basically, what that means is they have to be rich.
Yeah, for sure. That's the current system is set up so that you have to have a certain amount of money in order to invest in startups.
$1 million, excluding your house.
So for people who don't meet those minimum requirements, they're just out of the game.
Peacock says they had to turn most of their buddies away, and that left Space Monkey temporarily grounded.
There are great entrepreneurs with great technology and great product who are in Atlanta, Georgia, or who might be in, Wichita, Kansas.
Naval Ravikant is the CEO and co-founder of AngelList.
And we see some great companies coming to AngelList, actually, from remote locations.
AngelList is a social network for investors and entrepreneurs. Naval Ravikant says right now, most technology investments are made in Silicon Valley or Boston, Austin, or Seattle. Outside of these isolated technology hotspots, it can be hard to get a good idea off the ground. So one of the purposes of his site was to introduce people with good ideas to investors with money and some startup experience. The guys from Space Monkey joined AngelList late last year.
I don't think we would be in existence if it wasn't for AngelList.
Clint Gordon Carroll says through AngelList, they met a network of interested investors and raised almost $1 million in seed money in less than 2 months.
At the end of the day, you know, a central place where we could talk about what we're doing with potential investors made all the difference.
The Jobs Act that just passed Congress could make it much easier for startups like Space Monkey to raise money and for news sites like AngelList to get off the ground. The bill clears the way for companies to advertise that they're looking for investors, and it allows anyone to begin investing in these new privately held businesses. It also opens the door to new online crowdfunding sites, where lots of startups can strut their stuff and jockey for small investors' attention. Dozens of entrepreneurs like Sarah Hanks see a big opportunity in this space.
So I think we can expect to see the African princes inventing cold fusion any second now.
But Hanks is a securities lawyer.
Well, wherever there's money, there's going to be fraud. I think we have to stipulate that up front.
As the former general counsel for the Congressional Oversight Panel, charged with keeping an eye on the U.S. bank bailout, Sarah Hanks knows a thing or two about financial shenanigans. But this isn't stopping her from launching her own crowdfunding portal online. Unlike most of her potential future competitors, though, Hanks plans to hire securities lawyers to sift through the startups who want to raise money on her website and try to weed out the crooks. Still, none of these companies will be a sure thing.
Let's be clear about this. Most startups just don't get anywhere.
Which raises the question.
I mean, why would you invest in something that's probably going to fail?
Hanks says it can be fun. As long as you're investing money that you can actually afford to lose, then helping people take a crack at making their dreams come true can feel pretty good. Steve Henn, NPR News, Silicon Valley.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. The Fair Labor Association, a labor rights group, has released its audit of Apple's largest supplier in China, Foxconn. The group found what it calls significant issues with working conditions at three factories there, including more than 50 violations of the FLA's code of conduct and Chinese labor law. NPR's Steve Henn joins me now to talk about that and the company's response. And Steve, Foxconn makes a number of Apple's popular devices, from the iPhone to the iPad. What kind of problems did this labor rights group find there?
Well, the most common issue was that workers at these plants were routinely asked to work more than 60 hours a week. During peak production times, the average worker at the plants was putting in what the FLA called excessive overtime. These plants violated the Fair Labor Association's own guidelines for overtime, and in many cases, they were also violating Chinese labor laws. The Fair Labor Association also found fairly widespread examples of workers who were not being paid in full for the overtime that they actually put in. They also found health and safety violations, as well as communication gaps between management and workers that led to a pretty widespread sense of unsafe working conditions.
So how has Apple responded to this report?
Well, Apple asked for this report. They joined the Fair Labor Association and asked the FLA to audit these plants. And they've said that they will work with Foxconn and the Fair Labor Association to address the problems that the FLA found. And in some cases, they were already trying to address these issues before the report was issued. You know, Apple has said for a while that now that it wants its supply chain to be a model in the industry. So even before the report was made public, the company was taking steps to try and get in front of this, blunt the public relations damage. Tim Cook is in China this week, touring Foxconn plants there and meeting with executives. And the company began several months ago publishing overtime statistics for 500,000 employees that work at these plants. So in January, it said that 84% of its suppliers could abide by overtime rules in China. In February, in the ramp up to the release of the iPad, the new iPad, they said that their suppliers were doing even better and that 89% of the suppliers complied with overtime rules.
Well, what did the Chinese workers at these Foxconn plants tell the auditors from this labor rights group about the overtime that they were working?
Well, that's one of the interesting things. Close to two-thirds of the workers interviewed at these plants, and Foxconn interviewed the Fair Labor Association interviewed 35,000 workers there. But two-thirds of them said their salary wasn't sufficient to meet their basic needs. Arete Van Heerden, the president of the Fair Labor Association, told me that many of these workers, roughly a third of them, actually wanted more overtime.
That's true, and we find this in a lot of developing countries where you have young workers who've gone off to work in these factories, and they've gone there with the purpose of making as much money as quickly as possible.
So what that means is to address the overtime problem, Foxconn will have to both cut hours and raise wages at its plants. And when you're talking about cutting the hours for hundreds of thousands of employees, it becomes this incredibly enormous undertaking. Foxconn will need to hire tens of thousands of new employees. It'll probably need to build new dormitories and cafeterias. But still, Foxconn's pledged that by July of 2013, it will abide by Chinese labor laws and cut overtime at all of its Apple plants. And Van Heerden says he hopes that could put pressure on other employees in the electronics manufacturing industry to raise wages and cut hours as well.
Okay, NPR's Steve Henn, thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
Apple has been under scrutiny for working conditions in factories in China, factories that make its iPhones and iPads, and it responded by enlisting a workers' rights group. Now the Fair Labor Association has released its audit of Apple's largest supplier, Foxconn. It found more than 50 violations of both its code of conduct and Chinese labor laws at three Foxconn factories. NPR's Steve Henn reports.
Workers at Foxconn plants making Apple products are routinely asked to work more than 60 hours a week. During peak production, the average worker at these plants was putting in what the Fair Labor Association's president, Arete Van Heerden, called excessive amounts of overtime. And this audit is just the beginning.
Apple have asked us to look at all of their key contract manufacturers, and so this is going to be an ongoing process that will last the rest of the year.
The Fair Labor Association also found thousands of workers who were not being paid in full for overtime they worked. Its auditors uncovered numerous health and safety violations and reported that unions at Foxconn don't typically represent workers' interests, but instead are dominated by management.
I'd say it was more or less what I expected to see.
Kelly McElhaney is director of the Center for Responsible Business at UC Berkeley.
I think the timing with Tim Cook's trip over in China is interesting.
McElhaney says clearly Apple's new CEO, Tim Cook, has made this issue a priority.
But the report itself didn't really release anything that was surprising, I think, to anybody who's been following this story.
Apple, which asked for the Fair Labor Association to come to China to do this audit, released a statement saying the company appreciated the work the FLA was doing, and it was committed to fixing the issues the group identified. The company said it's been working for years to make, quote, Apple's supply chain a model for the industry.
I certainly hope this time Apple really means it, because certainly Apple is a company that has the resources to bring about an enormous transformation of working conditions in its supply chain and establish a model for the industry. The question is, will they really do it?
Scott Nova's executive director of the Workers' Rights Consortium. He says Apple's been pledging to stop excessive overtime problems at Foxconn for at least the past 6 years.
The question, of course, is not whether there are abuses at Foxconn. We know there are. The question is not whether Foxconn and Apple will promise to fix them. We know that they will. The question is whether anything will really change.
For its part, Foxconn pledged to increase wages. It also promised to eliminate illegal overtime at plants making Apple products by the summer of 2013.
It's a major challenge.
Orette Van Heerden from the Fair Labor Association.
They will have to hire tens of thousands of new workers. They need to build dormitory rooms for them, add the cafeteria and workspace for them. So certainly this is a project which will take, I think, the better part of a year to implement.
The Fair Labor Association interviewed more than 35,000 workers at Foxconn plants, and close to two-thirds of them said their salary wasn't sufficient to meet their basic needs. Despite the long hours they already worked, roughly a third of these workers actually wanted to work more overtime. Scott Nova.
And given the enormous resources at Apple's disposal and the mountain of cash that the company is sitting on, there is simply no excuse for any worker making Apple products to go one more day without being paid a genuine living wage.
This is something where Apple is really playing catch-up.
Dara O'Rourke is a professor at UC Berkeley and co-founder of GoodGuide.com. It's a website which rates products and their supply chains. He says Nike, Adidas, and Reebok have all taken on these issues in their supply chains already, and they did it more than a decade ago.
What Apple really needs to do is move from documenting these symptoms of wages and hours and health and safety to looking at the root causes of their problems, which quite frankly go all the way back to Cupertino, right? To their designers, to the people running their supply chain.
He says Apple needs to begin to think different about its own manufacturing process.
The company changing their designs at the last second, the company demanding really fast turnaround, the company pushing down on pricing and delivery times.
O'Rourke believes these kinds of demands from Apple's headquarters in Cupertino help create the conditions at Foxconn that the Fair Labor Association and others have documented. He says to address them, Apple needs to rethink its manufacturing process and innovate from the top down. Steve Henn, NPR News, Silicon Valley.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. The mysterious hacker group known as Anonymous says its members will take down the internet tomorrow. Or maybe they won't. No one really knows who speaks for Anonymous, and taking down the internet is no easy feat. Still, security experts are paying attention because, as NPR's Tom Gelton reports, Anonymous has shown it's capable of sophisticated cyber attacks.
To the extent Anonymous has an identity, it's political, anti-government, anti-business, anti-power. But pro-technology, these folks live and do battle online.
Hello, citizen of world. We are Anonymous. The greatest enemy of freedom is a happy slave. To protest SOPA.
Ironically, the latest Anonymous threat was aimed at the internet itself.
On March 31st, the internet will go black.
A digitized announcement released on the web several weeks ago said the blackout plan was prompted in part by concerns about internet censorship.
Remember, this is a protest. We are not trying to kill the internet. We are only temporarily shutting it down where it hurts the most.
But could hackers really take down the internet? The apparent plan is to go after what's called the domain name servers. When you type in a website name, your computer has to query a domain name server to find the corresponding internet address number. In theory, if the domain name servers get overloaded, they can't respond correctly.
If they were able to gather a lot of digital firepower, direct a lot of bogus traffic at one part of the DNS infrastructure, you could have an effect.
That's Richard Baitlich, chief security officer at Mandiant, a computer security firm. But he says that's hypothetical. The effect would probably be limited and may not even be noticeable. Plus, Baitlich points out, any time there's a threat allegedly from Anonymous, you have to wonder if it's just people posing as Anonymous.
They declare that they're part of this group and then say that they're going to do something serious to the internet or act out in some other way. That's what's kind of difficult about being a group that doesn't have any real membership or named leadership.
In fact, one of the Twitter accounts associated with Anonymous today included several tweets denying any internet blackout plan. What is this nonsense, said one. Stop asking us about it. That won't stop cybersecurity experts from paying close attention to the internet tomorrow. Anonymous and similar hacktivist groups are no longer a laughing matter. In the past, they got attention mostly for symbolic actions, temporarily taking down the CIA website, for example. But that's changing.
Suddenly, in this past year, hacktivism's on the map in a big way.
Brian Sartin is one of the authors of a massive study of computer data breaches released this month by Verizon. The headline, in 2011, cyber attacks by hacktivist groups accounted for the largest quantity of stolen or compromised records, far eclipsing what organized criminal groups managed to take. Cyber intrusions by hacktivist groups are easy to distinguish, Sartin says, because the perpetrators are not motivated by a simple desire for financial gain.
Hacktivism is the place where you see the most complexity, the most innovation, and the most ingenuity on the part of the perpetrators.
The motivation, Sartin says, is to inflict damage on a brand or an institution. The internet probably will not be noticeably affected tomorrow, but no cybersecurity expert these days is underestimating the capability of groups like Anonymous to hurt what they really want to hurt. Tom Gelton, NPR News, Washington.
Serious and pressing violations of Chinese labor laws. That's what inspectors found at China's Foxconn factories, the biggest suppliers of parts for Apple products, popular products like iPhones, iPads, iPods. The report of labor violations comes from an audit just released by the Fair Labor Association. That's a nonprofit labor rights group. Apple agreed to have the association inspect some of Foxconn's facilities after the New York Times reported worker abuses there. I'm joined now by Orat Van Heerden, who is CEO of the Fair Labor Association, who's in New York, to talk about the audit. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And first, tell us about what I gather was a key finding here, which was excessive overtime. How great is the problem of workers working in excess, as I believe it's 60 hours a week at Foxconn facilities?
It's true that Foxconn has made a lot of progress over the last couple of years in managing overtime. But when we tracked it over the course of the last 12 months, we found that they had exceeded the FLA code standard and the Apple code standard of 60 hours a week in a number of months. And those corresponded pretty much to the peak production periods.
Other violations of labor standards?
Well, the interesting thing with hours of work is that the Chinese legal limit is lower than the code limit. According to Chinese labor law, you shouldn't be working more than 49 hours a week. And so Apple and Foxconn, when we presented our findings to them, they said that they wouldn't just work to get into compliance with our code limits. They would actually press further and go for full legal compliance. I don't know of another company that has made such a public commitment. There are two reasons why I do believe this will happen. The first is that we will have assessors go in periodically to verify the progress. So they have a commitment to introduce this by July 2013, and we will track it all the way through to completion. And secondly, having made the commitment so publicly, I really don't think that Apple and Foxconn will miss this because the eyes of the world are on them.
Given the finding about overtime, will implementation of the association's audit result in workers who are currently working for Foxconn working fewer hours and making less money and more workers being employed to cover their high demand periods?
That's a very good question because they need to aim for something like a 20% cut in hours, and that would translate into a cut in pay. And Foxconn are well aware that if they did cut pay, of course, they would lose hundreds of thousands of workers. And so they can't afford to do that.
So to comply with the commitments they've made, they're going to have to pay more for labor.
Effectively, yes. and they're going to have to hire a lot more workers to make up for those lost hours. So this does represent a significant investment.
And so given your expectations at the outset of this audit and what you found, did Foxconn pass?
We don't use a pass-fail rating because every single facility we go into needs improvement. And that includes facilities we go into in the United States. So we find on average about 17 issues worldwide which need to be addressed, serious issues. So the Foxconn findings are ballpark. They're not out of the range at all. And this will be an ongoing effort to just continuously improve.
Well, Mr. Van Heerden, thank you very much for talking with us once again about it.
Thank you.
That's Aurette Van Heerden, who runs as the CEO, rather, of the Fair Labor Association. His group conducted an audit of more than 35,000 workers at Foxconn factories in China that supply Apple. He also says the audit found no child labor and that the company has made progress addressing employee health and safety concerns.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish.
I'm Robert Siegel. It's Monday, time for All Tech Considered. And we go retro in today's segment with a 21st century nod to some old technology. We'll start with an innovation that makes table saws safer. Tens of thousands of people are injured using table saws every year. NPR's Chris Arnold visited an inventor who wants to change that.
At his home on Cape Cod, David Butler flips on the fluorescent lights in his finished basement.
We're in my home workshop. I've been a lifelong woodworker.
There are a dozen different power saws down here, each with various prototypes of his invention bolted onto them.
And if you walk over here, this saw.
Woodworking's a hobby. For his career, Butler's been an electrical engineer. At the age of 18, he was a Navy electronics technician who worked on the Navy's first jet fighter. He then went on to work for IBM starting in 1958.
IBM paid me for 8 months to go to school and turned me loose on the world's largest computer, the Sage Air Defense System. And it went on and on. I worked for General Electric, for Citibank.
And here in his basement workshop, Butler's come up with an impressive invention. It's a safety brake for a table saw. We've done stories about a different company called SawStop, which has a high-tech safety brake, too. The broader industry has resisted adopting it. That's despite 4,000 grisly amputation injuries every single year in the U.S. on table saws. Now, along comes David Butler.
Let me start it.
Now we'll trigger the brake.
Boom.
That was quick.
That's quick.
Butler calls his system the Whirlwind. That's because the system uses a blade guard cover that also has a vacuum that sucks away the sawdust while you cut the wood. If you touch the plastic guard that's covering the spinning saw blade, that sets off a sensor, and then the brake kicks in.
I can trigger this without the saw even running. Watch.
Oh, what was that sound? Is there a compressor in there or something? Or
no,
what is that?
It's a sound of, it's electronic braking.
Saw motors run on what's called AC current. But Butler says if you cut that power and then send DC current into the motor in exactly the right way.
Like pulling the plug out of the wall and then hit it with a rapid, big surge of DC, you could stop the motor.
Compared to SawStop, each system has advantages and disadvantages, but one thing that is nice about Whirlwind...
You don't have to go out and buy a brand new table saw.
That's Butler's lifelong friend and business partner, Robert Calhoun. He says you can retrofit this brake onto any existing saw.
So you can go out and your Delta saw, which you have in the basement, which is 20 years old, we will have a kit.
Unfortunately for woodworking enthusiasts out there, you can't buy the safety brake yet. And that's the problem for a lot of inventors. The drawing board to the store shelf is a long road, and the major power tool companies, in this case, so far are not embracing these new high-tech safety innovations. When it comes to table saws, though, that may change. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has begun drafting new table saw safety regulations, and those may very well require advanced systems such as Whirlwind or SawStop. Chris Arnold, NPR News.